Hey everyone, welcome to Talk That Talk podcast. I'm your host, Brittany, and I'm so glad you're here. Everyone has a story, and everyone's story matters. Join me as I invite my guests on the show to share their stories in order to bring you hope, encouragement, and inspiration, as well as talk on the real about the things in life that truly matter. My hope is that you listen and leave feeling encouraged and that you would know that your story matters. Hey y'all, you are listening to, episode eight today. Today I am joined by a really special guest. She is my sister-in-law and she is awesome. Her name is Hannah Henry and she's married to my brother, Andrew. Hannah is in the army and that's how her and Andrew met actually. And she talks about being a woman in the military, which is so cool. She also talks about growing up in Colorado in a small town and being the first female from her high school to join the military. She talks about people doubting her, overcoming fears and challenges, and all of her accomplishments. She's a good role model to look up to and give some really encouraging advice on chasing your dreams. I think you guys are gonna really love her story, and I'm so excited for you to get to know her because I love her so much. So here is my conversation with Hannah. Hey, Hannah, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Britt.
You're welcome. Okay, so Hannah is my sister-in-law. She's married to my brother, Andrew, who's also sitting here. You can say, hey, Andrew.
Hey.
So, Hannah, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
My name is Hannah Henry. I am Brittany's sister-in-law. She mentioned I'm 22, almost 23 years old. I currently live in Virginia. That's where Andrew and I are stationed. We're both active duty military. We're watercraft operators in the military. Although I didn't live there my whole life, I was born and raised in Colorado, small town in Colorado, Silt.
Silt?
Yes, like the dirt. So yeah, I was born and raised there my whole life. Grew up in the mountains, but when it came time for me to graduate, I knew that I didn't want to stay around there. I knew that there was something more outside of the town, and I grew up my whole life with my parents encouraging me to leave and to go out there. You know, you can always leave and you can always come back, but sometimes it's hard to get out of there if you don't leave when you have the chance.
Yeah, we understand that growing up in a small town too. Absolutely. It can be easy to not. And there's nothing wrong with staying, but that can be a challenge. You know, people just stay there the whole lives and then never get to see anything outside of what they know. So,
absolutely.
Okay, so you grew up in Silt, Colorado.
I did.
The best. We got to get out there. Andrew, you've been out there. And you, how big was your high school?
My graduating class was barely 100 people.
Okay.
So in total, I think there was maybe almost 500 people in my whole school. But most of the people I went to high school with, I went to preschool with. So yeah. We stayed together all through preschool, grade school, middle school, high school. So it's very small compared to what I live in now, living in the city.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of how it is here, too. A lot of people you go to school with, you've been in school with your whole life. So we can relate to the small town feel. Mm-hmm. So growing up there, small town, everyone kind of knows everyone. And then you decided, like Andrew, to enlist in the military right out of high school. So walk me through, like, what made you decide to join the military when you were in your senior year? What made you kind of pick it? Because that's a different path than a lot of people take nowadays, especially because college is so ingrained in our society. So how did you come to that conclusion?
Well, I always knew that I wanted to serve. I think my real interest kind of sparked in middle school. I knew that I wanted to be in the military. At first, I was looking at the Air Force. I don't know why. It just seemed like that was the cool thing to do. My grandfather was in the Air Force. And so I started looking into their ROTC programs through the college. So you go to college for 4 years, you get your degree. And while you're in college, you're taking ROTC classes. Mm-hmm. And then once you graduate, you commission as an officer. So I started looking into that, and actually my dad and I, we went and talked to an Air Force recruiter my junior year of high school, and afterwards, on our ride home, he just said, I don't get a good feeling from that.
Mm.
The recruiter was kind of rude, didn't really seem like they even wanted me. They don't really, I felt like, I kind of got the vibe, like they didn't really care that I was there, that I was interested in the Air Force, even though I had pretty outstanding grades and wasn't a trouble troubled child.
Yeah.
So after that, I kind of switched my focus to the Army, primarily because the Army has a bigger medical field, which is what I was interested in. I didn't really give the other branches a second look.
Okay.
I just thought, you know, I think the Army's for me. I did a lot of research on the Army. And then that was my plan, too. I want to do Army ROTC. Mm-hmm. So my whole senior year, I was dead set on doing Army ROTC. So I worked really hard. They made you do like a diagnostic PT test. I did really well on that. Mm. And then it came time for the application period. So I knew I wanted to go to Washington State University in Pullman, Washington. My stepmother actually kind of turned me on to the school because I didn't want to go to school in state. Mm-hmm. I was so dead set on going out of state. So I started looking at programs that had both pre-med, because I wanted to be a doctor at the time, both pre-med and had ROTC. And Washington State was kind of like everything in one. So we went up there to visit, and I didn't realize how behind the curveball I was for the ROTC program. There were two selection periods, and I'd already missed the first one. So that kind of just set me up for failure. I didn't apply until the spring.
What does that even mean, the selection?
So there's two selection periods. They usually have one in the fall, and then they do their first review board around the winter time. It could be off a little bit for the deadlines, but then they do their second selection period in the spring. So for the selection period, this whole application, you have to get references. You had to do a diagnostic physical fitness test, and then you had to do these actual like long drawn out responses about like why you want to be a leader, why you think you have what it takes. And I guess I didn't realize the deadlines. I had kind of been communicating with some of the ROTC leaders up at Washington State, but I didn't really have a point of contact down in Colorado that could help me with that. Mm-hmm. So by the time I applied, I had already missed the first deadline for the first review. And that's kind of, it's very unheard of getting picked up the second time around. Usually it's those that they looked over the first time.
Okay.
And so I wasn't selected. And I was so upset.
Mm.
I was heartbroken. And I didn't find out I wasn't selected until about April, and I graduated in May. And I
so
was,
this whole time,
this
you're
whole
like,
time,
I'm going to Washington State.
Yes, I put my eggs all in one basket. I was already accepted into the school. I was already talking to people about being roommates with them. And what I was mostly stressed out about was how to pay for school, because it was out of state. I was trying to do pre-med, and I was really banking on the ROTC to pay for my school. And when I didn't get that, I started freaking out. Now, I know they have other scholarships.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, I did really well in school, but there's
That's
no
still
such,
a lot of money.
There's no such thing as a full ride scholarship.
Yeah.
You will still have to pay for fees.
Yeah.
You'll still have to pay for room and board. And I didn't want to put myself in that debt, and I didn't want to do that for my family. You know, of course, they're like, we'll help you. We'll help you as much as it can. But, you know, my mom is still raising my brother. I didn't want to have to rely on them or expect them to pay for my school. So I talked to one of the reserve recruiters, and he said, well, why don't you come in and talk to us? And so I brought my dad, and at first I was looking at doing the Army Reserves so I could go to school full time and still be in the Army.
And would they pay for your school if you were in the reserves?
They would.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They would offer tuition assistance. It wouldn't pay for you to go full-time, but it would still offer tuition assistance.
Okay.
And then eventually I could try to do the ROTC. They told me, they're like, well, you can apply your second year of college. But I was just freaked out. It was like, well, I have to figure out how to pay for the first year. Being out of state and all the fees, it was almost $42,000 a year.
Oh, it's like Penn State.
Yes. I was like, there's no way I can do this to myself. I was 18 years old, and I'm not going to put myself in almost $250,000 in debt just to go to school.
Yeah.
Up there. So I went and talked to the recruiter, and at first I was talking to him about reserves, and he said, well, what do you have against going active duty? And I said, well, I never really thought about it. You know, I always thought that I would go to college first.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's kind of ingrained in our society. Like, you get out of school, you go to college. There's really no in between. You can go to college or you start working.
Yeah.
And I knew I didn't want to stay in my small town and work. I knew I wanted to get out. I was so sick of the people in my small town, too. I was, like I said, I grew up with them my whole life. I'm like, this is the last thing I want to do, is stay here with all of these people. So I talked to the recruiter, and then I kind of started leaning towards going active duty. More of an education bonus. You could do 4 years. At the time, they were giving out some bonuses for certain jobs, MOSs, as we call them. So afterwards, I went home, and my dad said, I have a really good feeling about this. And he called, and he talked to my grandfather, the one that was in the Air Force, and he goes, I think it's a great idea. I think you should do it. So
the plan at that point was to go active duty, serve 4 years, and then go to school?
Go to school.
So get out and go to school, or just stay active duty while you go to school?
I think I was going to try to stay active duty and go to school. Either way, okay. I knew I was going to find a way to go to school.
Yeah.
Even if it meant just waiting for those 4 years.
Yeah.
So that night, I was laying there and I thought, you know, this is what I'm going to do with my life. This is what I'm going to do. So the next day, I called the recruiter and I said, let's do it. So I went and signed papers. Everyone in my school was astonished. They had no idea that I would join the military. They knew I wanted to do ROTC, but in their minds, I guess that wasn't the same thing because I would still be going to college like a normal kid.
Yeah.
And once I told them that I was going to join the Army, everyone was surprised. I was the first female from my school to ever join any branch of the military.
That's crazy.
So it was kind of like breaking a taboo. I mean, we really didn't have that many people join from our area anyways. Onesies and twosies from our graduating class, but I was the first female. And they never expected me. I was so girly in high school. I was a cheerleader. I was the epitome of like your girly preppy girl in school. So when I said I wanted to join the military, everyone was astonished. I had a lot of, I call them haters. I had a lot of haters and a lot of people that doubted me. Even yeah. some teachers doubted me. Like, are you sure? Is this really what you want to do? They didn't think I could make it.
Yeah.
And
that probably just made you want to do it even more.
It made me want to do it even more. I remember my government teacher, he was like, are you sure you're even strong enough to do this? And then right there, I was like, yep, I'm doing it. This is what I'm doing. I'm going to prove all of you wrong, because it made me so mad that no one believed in me. No one thought that I could do it. They thought that I would get there and that I would quit or that I would be too weak.
But your dad believed in you, right? And absolutely. What did your mom say about it? Because your parents are divorced.
They
so,
are.
Mm-hmm. So your dad was like, let's do it. What was your mom's response?
My mom was scared. She was okay with me doing the ROTC, but once I told her that I was going active duty, she immediately just thinks, oh my goodness, my baby's going to be deployed downrange,
mm-hmm.
be shot at.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of had to tell her, like, you know, that's not always the case. It depends on what job you choose.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been nervous the entire time I've been in the service. I've been in for 4 years now, and she's still nervous. Same thing with my grandmother. They watch the news, and then they'll mm-hmm. call me, are you okay? Are you leaving anytime soon? You know, they're still really nervous. But my mom is a big supporter, too. She really gave me props about taking it upon myself to figure out how to pay for my school instead of just being, hey, mom mm-hmm. and dad, foot my college bill.
Yeah.
But she was very supportive about it. And, you know, she loved to go to work and brag and be like, Hannah's joining the Army. And, mm-hmm. you know, even when I was over in Kuwait for a year, even some of the girls in her office sent me a care package. And
aww.
When I came home from Kuwait, I went to the office and, you know, they all wanted to see me. So she has supported my decision. My mom has always been a really big supporter of anything I do. She just wants me to be happy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so you decide this in like April.
I do, April. And I graduated about 3 weeks later.
And then when do you go to basic?
So I ended up enlisting. I started my process. I had a little bit of difficulties at first because I couldn't pass the medical portion. I have abnormally large tonsils, and they kept telling me I have strep throat. So you have to go through MEPS. You have to go through this medical evaluation process. And then after they review your medical checklist that they have you do, they examine you head to toe. It's really uncomfortable. You sit in this cold room in your drawers by yourself with all these other applicants. And then it's horrible. Yeah, you're just sitting there in your underwear and bras for us females, of course. And you're just sitting there waiting in this cold room, and you just have this packet. And then they line you all up, and they just start like checking the bottoms of your feet, making you do something called a duck walk, where you like crouch down and you have to walk while you're crouched down. All of these random strangers you've never met in your life, you'll probably never see them again. And then this like old doctor that comes in is inspecting you.
That is so weird. You had to do that too, Andrew? Oh my gosh. This is for MEPS?
This is for MEPS. This is for all branches of the military.
Okay.
So there are people on there who were trying to join the Marine Corps, Navy, Air Force, Army. We were all shoved in this room together. So once I finally passed that portion, I had to go get a doctor's note saying, no, she just has large tonsils. She's not ill. There's nothing wrong with her. I'm healthy as a horse.
Yeah.
You know, they let me join. And then that's when you chose your job.
Okay.
So at first, my recruiter had supposedly locked down this job. It's supposed to be an intel analyst, part of the intelligence series. And
that's what you wanted your job to
be. That's what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. They didn't have any medical jobs available at the time, which I was pretty bummed about. But he told me, he's like, you know, you can always reclassify. You can always change your job when you're in.
Okay.
Or you could try to go officer. But he said, you know, these are your jobs that are available to you. So I chose that one. it seemed interesting to me, and I thought, you know, if I ever decided I didn't want to do medical, I could find something on the outside to do for that.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I got all the way down there, and after I finished my medical portion, which took up most of the day, I sat down with the actual liaison for the Army, and he said, well, that job's no longer available. So I have to pick
something. You're just getting like blows left and right. Yes. Like you think you have it all figured out and then
I don't.
Then someone tells you that you don't.
That was just like my little taste of what the Army is like. Like you think you have it figured out, but the Army has something different planned for you.
So where were you?
Like, I was already graduated at this time.
But where were you at? Like in the US for this?
I was in Colorado.
You were still in Colorado. Mm-hmm.
I was still in Colorado. I had just graduated. The MEP station is in Denver. It's like 3 hours away from home. So this is my second trip down there.
Okay.
I've already gone through part of the process, and now I'm just at the point where I'm trying to pick my date to leave and pick my job. And at this point, I had already graduated high school. I was kind of feeling the pressure. Like, everyone's starting to get their stuff together for college, and I still haven't figured out my Army stuff, which was pretty discouraging because I didn't even have a job at the time. I had quit my summer job because I thought that I was going to leave the Army sooner.
Yeah.
So I was kind of freaking out a little bit, and then they started listing off the jobs for me, and none of them were medical, which was really discouraging because that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to do something in the medical field, and then they told me about a watercraft operator in 88 Kilo, and the liaison said, wow, you know, this job never opens up. I never see anybody get this job. He goes, I've heard of it. I didn't even know the Army had boats until I got this job.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a little bit of research, and I was just kind of going out on a limb, like, cool, this job sounds like, you know, one of a million. I've been landlocked my whole life living in Colorado. I've never been on the coast, never been on the shore.
Yeah.
So it sounded like a really cool job for me. So I chose that job, and then that was in June of 2014. And then I didn't leave for basic training until October of 2014.
And that's when you left too, Andrew. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like, we...
Like, if you wouldn't have chosen that job, you guys might not be married.
I never would have met him. It's crazy to think about that we were on, like, complete opposite sides of the United States, and we joined the Army the same exact day. We graduated basic training the same exact day. And then that's when we met each other, was when we went to our AIT, our Advanced Individual Training. That's where we actually trained up to become watercraft operators, and that's where I met him.
And that was in North Carolina?
I was in Virginia.
I was in Virginia.
Yeah, same place we're at right now. That was in Fort Eustis, Virginia.
Okay. So where did you go to basic training?
I went to basic training in Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
Okay.
And then fate brought us together.
Yeah. That's crazy. Okay, so wait, when did you meet at AIT? Like, do you remember meeting each other?
It was kind of crazy the first day we got there. I got there really late at night. I had to leave right after graduation in Oklahoma. I slept like 3 hours, and then they started busing us all to the airport at like 1 o'clock in the morning to go to Virginia. And then I took almost all day to get to Virginia. And then I just kind of sat at the airport waiting for someone to come and get me. It was just kind of a cluster. So I finally got to Fort Eustis, and, you know, they've been dealing with in processing all these new soldiers, all of us coming in for the school. And so I really didn't know what was going on, and it was tired. So I don't really remember seeing him like the first couple days. And then once we kind of got in process and settled and ready for our classes to start, that's when we really met each other. Our class was pretty small. But even then in class, I really didn't talk to him much. There was one girl that I, like, we had met each other first day of basic training, and we'd been with each other this whole time. So her and I, we just kind of did our own thing, and I really didn't talk to Andrew much. I remember him being, like, I used to call him High Speed Henry.
Really?
Yeah, because I felt like he just thought he was so cool, and he just thought that he was just, like, such a brainiac with all this watercraft stuff.
Wait,
so,
really?
Yeah, he kind of annoyed me at first. I was like, oh, great. High Speed Henry raising his hand again.
Oh, Andrew, were you the try hard in AIT?
At first, yeah. At first, towards the end of it, I didn't care anymore. I thought I'd be done.
That's hilarious.
I was in 20 school, though.
That's really funny. Okay, so... what was basic training like? Like, was it what you expected, or was it way worse or easier?
I didn't know what to expect, honestly. Everyone made it sound like it was so terrible, so I felt like I just prepared myself for the worst and kind of hoped for the best. The first day I got there, I've been traveling, same thing, all day, so I had to go to MEPS the day before again to, like, finalize all of my paperwork and to make sure that nothing health-wise had changed. And then We left super late that night to fly down to Oklahoma. It wasn't very far from Colorado. I think it was like an hour flight.
Mm-hmm.
So we traveled all day, and then finally we were being bused into like the reception, like the integration area. Mm-hmm. So all of us new recruits, first thing I remember is this drill sergeant gets on the bus and says, "Get your blank and get off the blanking bus."
Oh my gosh.
I was just like, what did I do? Uh-huh. What did I sign up for? So I got off the bus, and I remember we were all just like standing in line, and I was standing at parade rest, which is when you have like your hands behind your back. And I just remember I was shaking so hard, but it wasn't even cold, but I was just so nervous. I was shaking so hard. And they're just yelling at us, and they're trying to get us through, and they're throwing clothes at us, and like, here, these are your workout clothes. If you have any contraband, throw it out. And oh my goodness, I was so embarrassed. So my friend who had been through basic training before, he was at my recruiting station. He's like, the last couple of days of basic training are really boring, so bring something with you to read. Well, he didn't go to Fort Sill, so he didn't know what the rules were. Apparently, you weren't allowed to have any kind of books with you. And so I brought a couple books with me, and one of them was 50 Shades of Grey. I didn't know what the book was about. Someone had just told me, they're like, oh, it's a really good book. Like, I'm like, oh, it's like a chick flick. Yeah, lies. So I took that book with me because I'm an idiot. And as they were going through our bags to make sure you didn't have any contraband, and they picked that book up, and they're like, what the heck is this, private? What is this? And then all the drill sergeants just start laughing. And then they threw the book across the ground, and I was just like almost on the verge of tears, just an embarrassment. Uh-huh. I wasn't like scared. I was just so embarrassed. Like, yeah. Great, my first day here, and I'm already that one person.
Oh.
Yeah, come to find out, I didn't even like read the book or watch the movie until almost 2 years later, and then I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I took that book with me. Mortified.
That book brings you scarred memories.
Yes, scarred memories. So I was just mortified. But as far as basic training, it was hard. I'm not gonna lie at all. It was very hard.
Did you ever like replay those people that doubted you in your mind, like during those moments in basic training where you like wanted to give up?
No, I may have motivated me. The last kind of event that we had to do for basic, we had to do this really long ruck march. How long was it, Andrew?
Didn't you say 12 miles?
It's something that's a little bit over 12 miles.
Which, explain to people what that is, because I don't think people will know what that is.
So a ruck march is when you have a weighted assault pack on your back, a weighted backpack in civilian terms, a weighted backpack, and you're in full uniform, and you have your weapon with you, and you are essentially just walking.
And that's what, like, close to 40 pounds?
Yeah, I think ours was 35, because we were in training status. But usually when you get out of the military, depending on, like, what unit you're at, it can be, like, all the way up to 65. If you're, like, in an infantry area, I think it can be almost, like, 70.
That's crazy.
So ours was 35, and we didn't even have, like, the proper... They have actual ruck sacks that have, like, a molded frame that kind of contours your back to help displace the load. We didn't even have those. They just gave us, like, straight... They were, like, straight backpacks.
Uh-huh.
And then you had to put 35 pounds in it. And so it was just pulling on your shoulders. So we didn't even have, like, real ruck sacks. So that was... That was horrible. We had already done a couple rucks prior to that, and I had blisters already from the prior rucks.
Like on your feet?
I did. I had blisters already from my boots. They're still trying to break in your boots. I mean, you haven't had them that long.
Yeah.
I had blisters already to the point where I had like a blister on a blister.
Ugh.
And my feet hurt, and I was tired, and I was cold because we had just had our field week the week before. And it was to the point where
And that's where you like simulate... war, right? And you're like sleeping on the ground or kind of things like that.
Essentially, you're still doing like mini classes, but yeah, you are out there. And it was so cold. I think the wind chill was like -13. It was
sounds like my absolute worst nightmare.
It was so cold, and you couldn't wear any of your cold weather gear to keep you warm because you were going to be sweating. They told you not to wear that because
You're
going to be sweating. And then when you do stop for like a water break or if you have to go to the bathroom or whatever, you're going to get really cold because your body temperature is going to lower again.
Yeah.
And then this sweat's essentially just going to freeze to you. So we didn't have any of that. I remember I was just cold. I was tired. My feet hurt. I had blisters. My feet were bleeding. And
that's when you thought about giving up.
I did for a split second. And then I thought, no, I've already come too far. This is the last thing I have to do. And then I replayed all those people who said I wasn't going to be able to do it. Like, my family was already planning to come to graduation the next week. They were going to come all the way from Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I couldn't give up. I know that they had already been like, oh, Hannah's going to graduate soon. I just couldn't face the humiliation if I would not have finished.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what pushed me through. But I never really had, like, a give-up moment in basic mm-hmm. training. I just thought, oh, my gosh, this sucks. I wanted to get it over with. But
you knew you could get through it.
I knew I could get through it. There were some people, like, second week, they were like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. And then they would end up being stuck there longer because it's not easy to get out of the Army, even if you haven't mm-hmm. completed all the training. There's a bunch of paperwork that has to go through, and essentially you just kind of sit there, and I'm like, you could have just finished basic training and you would have been gone already, but instead you gave up and now you're sitting here even longer. Mm-hmm. So I looked at those people and I thought, for sure, I'm not giving up. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna get out of here.
Yeah.
So I did. It was very testing. It was a whole other beast.
Mm-hmm. What did you, like, tell yourself to get through that? Like, what was your, other than people doubting you, like, what else kept you going?
My family. My dad would write me letters. I feel like he wrote me letters almost every day. I was getting a letter from him just saying how proud he was. And that really kept me going. I mean, sometimes it would even bring a tear to my eye when I read his letters, because he'd be like, I'm so proud of you. You're doing so good. I know you can finish this.
Aww.
And so that really kept me going. And my mom, same thing. She'd write me letters too. And my little brother was just so proud that I was in the military. So my family kept me going.
Mm-hmm.
They kept me going, and I knew that I didn't have any other choice but to just keep pushing, because I wasn't a quitter.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I don't think I could have made it through.
I think you could have. I tell people, I'm like, I'm the girliest person in the world, and I was a cheerleader. And
but there's a difference between being,
I did like, it.
It's mental strength, you it know, is. Way more than I think, well, maybe I could. I run 13 miles, but that was just one day. This is like 6 weeks.
You just had to tell yourself, even though the drill sergeants are screaming at you, that's what they're supposed to do. They're trying to break you. It's all a game.
Yeah.
Their whole game is you get there, they break you down, and then they build you up as a soldier. So yeah. They break you down.
In order to build you up.
So that they can build you up to the point where, like, you just, like, there were many times they just made me feel like an idiot. I just felt like such a loser. I was like, wow, I suck at life right now. They just told me I suck at life.
Yeah.
But I'm going to get better. Yeah. And so you just kind of have to use that as motivation. You can't let it get to you.
So fun fact, we had to pause this episode and then come back. We had to go to our Christmas dinner, and then Hannah and Andrew went back to Virginia. So we're recording the second half of this podcast right now. So Hannah's back with me. Hey, Hannah.
Hey.
Okay, so we talked about just kind of your story of being in high school and you being the first female from your high school to go into the military, and how life just kind of didn't pan out the way you wanted, which I think a lot of us can relate to. I know I can relate to that, thinking that you had your life planned out and then finding out that things aren't going to go the way that you hoped. So you kind of had to adjust to this new plan. You go into the Army. What is it like, because you're still in the Army? What has your experience been being a woman in the military? Have you experienced any gender discrimination or just, like, awkwardness? Tell us what that experience has been like for you.
Overall, I think it's been really, really good. They really try to push gender equality. You know, recently, within, like, the last couple years, they've opened up combat MOSs to females. They're really trying to get that gender integration. But I did experience some gender discrimination. It was actually when I first got to my unit in Kuwait. I was one of only two females on a crew of about 30-plus people. So, you know, we were obviously in a very male-dominated population.
Yeah.
But we were still performing and still doing the same daily tasks as all of the other males. I mean, I really didn't think about it as being, like, oh, male or female work. But I did have a supervisor who just felt like, it seemed like he would try to find other work for us to do, so we weren't working out there on the deck. He would try to find desk work for us to do or paperwork, and it got really frustrating because we were working just as hard as the guys. You know, we might not be as strong, but we were still out there trying to bust our butt along with them.
Yeah.
And I finally had to go and talk to one of our equal opportunity reps because I didn't really know how to go about it. You know, I was still new there. I was new to the Army, and I didn't want him to get in trouble. And I was afraid that he would get mad at me if I just went up to him and was like, hey, what the heck?
Yeah. So
he ended up pulling him aside and letting him know, and he actually came and apologized. He was like, I didn't realize that I was I was doing that to you. I mean, I see it now, but he's like, I didn't mean to be like that. He's like, I think you guys are both fully capable of doing the same tasks as the males, but you'll kind of realize that everywhere you go. Even being in my new unit, you kind of come across these people, even the females too, who are from this older generation where they just kind of think that, you know, females should be doing the paperwork and they shouldn't be out there doing the manual labor. And then you kind of come into another dilemma where if you play into that stereotype, then you have the other male soldiers looking at you like you're the weak link. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to play into that stereotype, so you try to hold your own. And but then they look at you, if they try to help you and you're trying to prove that, no, I can do this myself, you know, I'm strong, it might take me a little bit longer, but I can still do this.
Yeah.
Then they think that you're being stuck up because you don't accept their help. But then you give in to it, like, okay, yeah, sure, you can do this, even though you know you can do it by yourself. You let the male help you, and then you see others perceive you as like, oh, she's being weak, she's just trying to let the guy do all of the work, she's just playing into that stereotype. So it's hard.
Yeah.
So I know that when I first got to my most recent unit, they kind of perceived me as stuck up
because I wouldn't accept help.
Yeah, because I wouldn't accept help. We were working out in our marshalling yard, is what they call it. It's where we store all of the pieces for our pier. And it's a lot of manual labor, swinging sledgehammers and tanker bars. And they would try to help you. And I understand they're just trying to be polite, but I'm like, nope, I got it. I'll do it myself.
Yeah.
And they would just kind of like, oh, well, she's trying to prove something. Like, I'm just trying to do my work, try to pull my own, like, try to pull my own. Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to pull my own weight here. So that was kind of really the only thing. But I think for the most part, the military really is trying to work towards being more gender equal.
That's good. In your situation where you told your equal, what was it? Equal opportunity or equal?
Yeah, equal opportunity.
Yeah, so you told that rep, like, hey, I don't know how to approach my supervisor. And luckily, like, in your scenario, your supervisor was awesome and came to you and apologized. But, like, have you heard of other people who have had similar experiences and then they do face retaliation from their supervisors? Like, is that a common thing?
I would say it is. Okay. It's usually, like, those people who are, like, quoted being reported. They really get bent out of shape about it. And it's not that you're, like, trying to be out to get them. You're just trying to kind of call them and be like, hey, call them out on what they're doing. Like, hey, yeah. You can't do this. Yeah. You're not supposed to be doing this.
Yeah.
But I have seen some people kind of retaliate against that. And it's like, no one's out to get you.
Mm-hmm.
We're just trying to make you realize that what you're doing is not cool.
Well, then it makes people feel like they can't be honest or report things because then their supervisor is going to hate them, which is not...
Exactly. Not, then you run into a situation where it's like they end up not reporting it and then just working in a toxic work environment.
Yeah.
And that's not productive for anybody.
Yeah. And would you say that happens more to females than males, or is it kind of equal across the board?
I would say it's pretty equal across the board. I do feel like females are kind of more of the ones to report gender inequality.
Yeah.
As far as like equal opportunity, just because the military still is a very predominantly male work setting for you.
Yeah.
But I mean, I knew that going in.
Right.
I knew that I was going to be one of the only females. I mean, still, even in this company that I'm in right now, I'm one of maybe 15 females, and there's 200 people total. So you have 15 females out of a population that's 200. I mean,
yeah,
already kind of outnumbered, and it's kind of inevitable that that might happen because, like I said, you have this older generation, and just the way that some people are brought up, they just believe that women should be in the kitchen, believe that women should be doing the desk jobs.
Yeah.
But that's not always the case.
Yeah. When I was in college, I took a class, a sociology class on the military, and we had to watch this documentary about rape in the military and about these women, mostly women, there were males too, but mostly women who were, like, sexually assaulted by their supervisor, and, like, they'd be, you know, on tour with them, like, and they had to live around them for, like, the next year or so, and they would report it, and nothing really would happen. Have you seen any of that kind of thing happen or heard about any of those kinds of things happening?
I have, and I really think that the program, the sexual harassment, assault, and prevention program is what they call it, they really have come a long ways with listening to the victim, having different reporting options for the victim so that you don't have to stay in that same working environment as the person who assaulted you.
That's awesome.
So they really take it seriously. I mean, down to just even having like sexually offensive language. If someone just says something that is just offensive to you, you can report that and they'll be reprimanded for that. So they really try to have like a comfortable working environment so that you don't have to feel like that. So that being a male or female in your unit, you don't have to feel like
afraid.
Well, this person makes you don't have to be afraid that this person makes me feel uncomfortable or I don't want to be left alone with this person. And they really try to make it confidential if you want it to. They have numerous reps that you can go to talk to report it. So I really do think that the military has come a long way. But unfortunately, I don't think they're 100% there.
Yeah,
because it's still happening. It's still being reported. But I really think that now that people are seeing the consequences that it has, I mean, ruins your career in the military. Then you're going to face legal problems after that too. Mm-hmm. Jail time. So you mean you just lost your career and now you have jail time. So I really think getting their point across there, hey, we're not going to tolerate this. I think that it has helped it go down. But yeah. I think all you can do is just try to advocate and educate people about, hey, this is not okay.
Right. Well, I think it's interesting too, like with women being able to do combat jobs now and like the Me Too movement and all these different things that are happening culturally, the military does need to like, you know, keep up with what's going on. So that's really encouraging to hear that it sounds like more programs put into place and more resources for people.
Absolutely.
Because that was like a big chunk of our class. It's good to hear that you haven't faced that firsthand and that there seems to be progress in that area.
Mm-hmm. There really is. And even like the soldiers around you, they're really big on if you're just an innocent bystander, you're not innocent because you witnessed it happen. So you have just as much responsibility as to report it and to make sure that victim is in a safe environment. And you can get in just as much trouble for not saying anything as the person who did the actual assault.
That's really big.
So it really makes you feel like people have your back because they know what to look for and they're more inclined to step forward and be like, hey, that's not okay.
Yeah.
And to help the victim. So I really feel like I feel comfortable serving with those who I serve because I know that they're educated on that.
That's good. Okay. So talk a little bit about, you're like a boss, like you're in charge of soldiers in your, what is it? Unit, company? What do you call it?
Both.
Okay.
We have like our official title is the 331st Transportation Company, but it can be referred to as a company or unit. But we have about 200 people in our company.
And you're how many people are you in charge of?
Right now, I'm in charge of 4 people.
Okay.
So I am working a little bit outside of my job, as they would say. I worked on the boats for a little bit, but then they needed someone who would take over as the supervisor for the human resources part of our unit. So I was put into that position once I got promoted to sergeant.
So what do you do as the human resources supervisor?
So being in charge of the human resource department in my unit, we just process people's financial issues, if they have a pay inquiry that they have to do, just pretty much every soldier's administrative work that they have. It is processed through us, and then we vet it to the proper channels, whether it be like the finance office or if they have any other administrative issues, then we kind of process it up. So,
okay.
I mean, essentially, I'm in charge of 4 soldiers, but I kind of have the responsibility of all of the issues of 200 soldiers.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're dealing with 200 soldiers' crap, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And
so,
you've had some pretty intense experiences with that, haven't you?
I have. It's definitely not for those who have thin skin.
Mm-hmm.
I have learned to just let it go when someone comes up to you and they're upset. Why did I get paid this month? You know, you just got to be like, okay, well, let's calm down.
Yeah.
Let's look at the situation. I will help you out as much as I can. I'll let you know the proper channels we need to go to. But I think my confidence has grown, even just being in that job. Not only have I learned the administrative skills, but I've learned better communication skills, how to communicate with different people, whether it be high-ranking people or the soldiers. So it's been a pretty good opportunity for me going up there. You know, not everyone goes up is able to go up there to take over for the human resources. It was kind of just like, oh, I was picked and randomly thrown in that position one day. So it keeps me busy, but it's been a really good learning experience that I hope to take that with me when I do get out of the military.
Yeah, and I'm sure you will. And you're going into the medical field, so you're learning how to deal with people who are in, you know, some sort of sticky situation and need help, and you're learning that patience, and that's all, you know, good for that kind of environment too.
Absolutely.
So I want to ask, what, you know, if there's someone out there who they're a senior in high school and they're thinking about joining the military, because college isn't for everyone. I firmly believe that. You know, my three brothers are not, they're just not college people. And that's okay. So, you know, maybe there's someone who's like, oh, I don't really want to go to college, but I kind of feel like I have to, but I kind of want to join the military. And maybe even, like, especially girls out there who are thinking about serving their country, what would you say to them, and maybe talk through their fears or their concerns a little bit?
I tell them to absolutely go for it. If you have been thinking about it and you know that college, or you may be thinking that college isn't for you, the military can provide so much for you and will train you in a skill set that you can even take with you if you decide not to stay in the military for 20 years.
Yeah.
So I think that you get a lot of experience. It helps you grow up. It helps you mature into a responsible person. You have all of these career skills that you have leadership training under your belt when you get out, better communication skills, and then you'll also have that college benefit for you if you do decide to get out and go to college. But I think that if you've been thinking about it, you should absolutely go for it. And for the girls out there who are worried about, oh, well, maybe I'm not strong enough, or I'm too girly, or I might be too weak, you shouldn't worry about that at all, because when you go to basic training, they train you to be a strong person.
Yeah.
Overcome your fear, overcome your insecurities, and maybe your little bit of personal anxiety that you have that you might not be able to do it, that you're not good enough.
Yeah.
So I think that overall it would just make you a better person. So I say you should go for it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you've accomplished a lot in your 4 years. Well, I guess has it been more than 4 years now?
I just hit my 4 year mark. Yep, I've been in the Army for 4 years now.
So you're a freaking sergeant, which I don't really know what, I mean, I know that's good, but I don't know where that falls in the other things, you know. But how many times have you been promoted to get to sergeant?
I've been promoted 4 times.
So you've been promoted once a year. That's crazy.
Yeah, I was gonna say, pretty much it equates out to once a year. I made it a goal to become a sergeant before my 4 year mark, and I set out to it, and I try to fast track as much as I could, because it's not always guaranteed that you'll get promoted within 4 years. I mean, there's a couple hoops you have to jump through in order to get to that promotion of sergeant. So I really had to try to set myself aside from my peers and really, really work hard to try to get to that point where I'm at right now. And I feel like I've set a lot of personal goals, and the military has helped me accomplish them.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been easy, but it has 100% been worth it.
That's awesome. So what are your goals going forward? And, you know, we're all about New Year's resolutions right now too. So what are your goals from here on out? Big picture.
Big picture, my big goal for this year is to get accepted into the nursing program. So I will actually be finishing up my Army contract within the next couple months. And also within the next couple months, I will be applying to the nursing program at one of the colleges here to become a registered nurse. So that's my goal, is to get accepted. Yes, my goal is to get accepted into that program. I feel like I've been working at it and just like chipping away slowly, taking class here, taking class there. And it's like, I finally see the light at the end of this tunnel, that I can finally apply to the program and finally get into the medical field like I've been striving to do.
Since high school.
So that's my goal.
That's awesome. Well, I feel like you're the, if you look up girl power in the dictionary, you'll find your name under there.
You're so nice.
No, but you are awesome. And it's really cool to see how much you've accomplished and that you're not done yet. And I think you're a great role model for younger girls who, anyone really, who has a dream and doesn't know how they're going to make it come true. So thanks for being here and sharing your story.
Thank you so much for talking with me letting me have the opportunity to talk with you.
Yeah, dude. All right. Well, we will be back with you guys next time. Hey, you guys, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you like what you hear, head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave me a rating and review. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never have to miss the latest episode. If you want to learn more about the show or get in touch with me, you can head on over to talkthattalkpodcast.squarespace.com. Again, that's talkthattalkpodcast.squarespace.com. If you have any questions or if you want to share your story and be on the show, give me a shout. I would love to hear from you. Thank you guys so much again for listening and for all of your support. It means so much to me. And with that, we will be back next time. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day. Bye-bye.